Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks on this Halloween, October 31st, 2024. Tom, new ranking out. I'll tell you, there's a survey for everything. Top 20 holidays. Where do you think Halloween ranks in America?
Including Christmas and Thanksgiving.
Oh, we've got everything in here.
4th of July.
We got Juneteenth. We got St. Patrick's Day, New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, Easter, of course.
If I was picking, I would say number 3 behind Christmas and Thanksgiving.
How in the world did you know that? That is the ranking.
It was just my feeling.
That is the ranking. And wow, one of my favorite holidays, way down on the list, St. Patrick's Day. I would easily.
Well, that's one of my favorites too, but that's a personal thing.
Yeah,
with
but
me.
I would easily switch Halloween, put that down near where they rank St. Patrick's Day, near the bottom of the list. And you would think for a guy who grew up in a community that actually had 2 trick-or-treat nights, I would be more enthusiastic about Halloween. In Wilmette, Illinois, on the North Shore of Chicago, we did Beggar's Night. They don't do it anymore. But Beggar's Night was a trick-or-treating the night before Halloween.
So, I don't know. I guess people just like the idea of getting all gussied up and dressed up in fancy schmancy costumes.
Oh, yeah.
And weird-looking werewolf things.
We got some interesting looks here at Bustos Media, where we have 5 radio stations under one roof. This one's KVOI, The Voice. We have our worldwide live listening at buckmastershow.com. Our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. And, of course, we're in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios for The Buckmaster Show. Let's get on the live line now and go up to Phoenix. Will Humble is the Executive Director of the Arizona Public Health Association, former Director of the Arizona Department of Public of Health Services. Hey, Will, how are you?
Good morning, or actually, good afternoon.
Are you into Halloween? Is it one of your favorite days or not?
Well, it's kind of fun, but I can remember when I was a kid, I grew up on the east side of Tucson near Palo Verde High out there, and like we would talk about what we were going to be for Halloween for like a month ahead of time, you know?
Yeah.
And in our back in those days, you know, that part of Tucson, I mean, every house had 3 kids in it.
Oh yeah.
And the whole neighborhood just sort of came alive on that night. So I have fond memories as a kid. I don't do as much these days as a 64-year-old, but I can remember some of my costumes even when I was 6 and 7 and stuff.
Wow. Well, they're very...
My mummy thing came undone, you know, and I was standing in the street and my mummy sheets came undone. Anyway.
I can't imagine that, Will. There are very few trick-or-treaters, at least in my neighborhood, that go door-to-door up in the foothills of Tucson. I'm sure it's that way. In parts of Phoenix, things have really changed, and maybe that's not such a bad thing because I don't know how many healthy candies there are out there.
Well, you know, here's my attitude about Halloween is that, you know, everything in life and in public health is there's positives and negatives to everything. And I know the candies are bad and there's safety issues if kids can't see and parents need to make sure that their kids are being safe around traffic. But Halloween is also a really good opportunity for people to socially connect, which is a public health thing too. So the social connectedness that comes with the Halloween, I think, outweighs any of that bad stuff like all the rotten candy and stuff that kids get. And by the way, when my kids were little, you know, they'd go trick-or-treating and their candy would slowly go away without them knowing it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like... So we would pilfer it to make sure that they still got some candy, but maybe not as much as they originally had.
Yeah, my only sibling, my older brother, I would hide my stash for a while, but he always found it, so didn't last that long. All right, a couple of health items that we do need to address. The CDC says now for folks over 65 and those that have that are compromised, their immune system has been compromised, two COVID shots yearly now. That's what they're saying, every 6 months.
Yeah, for seniors, and like you said, with people with medical conditions that put them at risk there, they looked at the data and the number of hospitalizations from COVID and bounced that off the demographics and figured out that for folks that the benefits outweigh the risks for sure for people over 65 and others with medical conditions to get the shot a year, once going in sort of early summer and maybe say June, because we do usually have a summertime COVID wave. And then again, right about this time of year, before we get the run up before the end of the year holidays. And by the way, there's three different vaccines that are available right now that are updated for the exact strains that are circulating right now. There's, you know, Moderna and Pfizer, which people are familiar with. But there's also it's called a Novavax vaccine, updated for the latest versions of the virus. And it's a conventional vaccine. It doesn't use mRNA technology. So for people that have questions or just don't like mRNA for whatever reason, you can get the Novavax vaccine, which is just, you know, made in very similar ways to all other vaccines.
A whooping cough is precocious, right, Will Humble?
Yeah, pertussis, the name of the bacteria that causes whooping cough is called Bordetella pertussis. And so we call it pertussis for short in the public health world. Most people know it as whooping cough. And we're in a real upswing in Arizona and across the whole country right now, which is not totally unusual. We do see waves of whooping cough infections over the years. Mostly because the vaccine has waning immunity, which is why you need the Tdap. You ever heard of the Tdap booster, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's tetanus booster in there and pertussis. And we recommend those every 10 years for adults because there is waning immunity. So both pertussis and tetanus, you need to have a booster every so often. Talk to your doctor about it. But the vaccine only will last a certain, you know, while. And by the way, both of those are bacteria, not viruses. And the vaccines for bacteria tend to not last as long as the vaccines for viruses.
Yeah, I recently had that. And a lot of folks just, lose track, which is, you know, it's understandable. Every 10 years, you need that shot, especially if you're doing some traveling. You want to get that tetanus shot. Make sure you're up to date on that. Well, I want to talk.
And your yard work.
Yeah, even yard work,
doing
right?
Stuff around the house.
Sure.
I mean, and if you're active in the yard or if you're an active person, a lot of people are, it's important to keep up to date on that one.
You know, of course, we'll be so happy, many of us, when the election finally is over, and who knows when we'll actually get results. But depending on who wins, there will be repercussions for the public health community generally. If you could touch on that a little bit, Will Humble.
Well, I mean, there's a pretty big difference between the way the two candidates view the role of the federal government in public health. And I think right now, of course, we have the Biden administration. I wouldn't expect if it's the Harris administration next, I wouldn't expect major changes in the way, you know, the agencies like Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services and Health Resources Service Administration and CDC and the FDA operate. You know, there's probably going to be changes with directors and some senior leadership changes and things like that. But I don't foresee a major change in the way the agencies view their role in protecting the public. But if it does end up to be a second Trump administration, they've signaled, at least Robert Kennedy Jr. has signaled that he's been told by former President Trump that he's going to be nominated. He will be the nominee for the Department of Health and Human Services, which controls the Food and Drug Administration, CDC, Health Services Resource Administration, Medicare and Medicaid Services. It's a super agency with a ton of authority. And perhaps the biggest change I think that we would see if it is a Trump administration, and Mr. Kennedy is the secretary, is with the Food and Drug Administration, because Kennedy has expressed a lot of concern about the way the FDA does its business. He has been very skeptical about the safety and efficacy of vaccines, which, by the way, are perhaps, if not the number one public health achievement over the last 100 years, it's in the top three. And he's very skeptical of, he said publicly, he doesn't think vaccines are safe. So, you know, many of us in the public health world are actually pretty worried about what might happen in terms of evidence-based public health policy if Mr. Kennedy ends up being the Secretary of Health and Human Services. So that remains to be seen. I mean, maybe, you know, Trump wins. Maybe he's not going to nominate Kennedy after all. Maybe something will happen. But if it is Mr. Kennedy, he's, at least for us in the public health world, we see some pretty ominous signs with respect to the way he makes decisions and the lack of his emphasis on using evidence to drive those decisions.
All right, we're talking to Will Humble. Will is our health contributor, public health contributor. We have 24 or so fine people who are experts in their field on the Buckmaster homepage at buckmastershow.com. You can see all of these capable people, and their bios are there at buckmastershow.com. Will, the former health director for the Arizona Department of Health Services. All right, Will will stick around. We'll have segment two with him. But first, want to talk about Mona's Danish Bakery. We are getting close to the holidays, and Mona's is, of course, ready. One of the biggest holidays for Mona. And Steve and the team up there is Thanksgiving, and they'll be taking your orders for pies and dinner rolls very soon. Mona'sDanishBakery.com is their website. They're the home of the Danish Kringle, and talking about Danish Kringle makes me think of Old St. Nick and Christmas. So the holiday's coming, and Mona's is ready. Northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. Buckmaster on a Thursday, talking public health, and we'll talk some more right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
On average, the Regional Transportation Authority annually contributes over $100 million to regional transportation improvements to supplement limited federal and state funds. This critical funding source provides funding for nearly two-thirds of our region's needed transportation improvements through its 2006 voter-approved half-cent sales tax. To receive updates on a new 20-year plan in development, visit rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. I heard this knocking at the door, Tom, and it was the dog. Monica Dangler's here, brought in for our mid-show segment, an animal looking for a home, and I heard this knock. It was the dog's tail hitting the door of the studio. Anyway, that's coming up at about 12:35 today, but let's continue with our discussion about public health. Will Humble, former director for the Arizona Health Services Department, is with us on the live line. Will, of course, is doing a great job as the executive director of the Arizona Public Health Association, and he has a very active blog and posts a lot of stuff, and he's been posting about speed cameras. I noticed Maricopa County's going all in on this, and San Jose, where I spent about 8 years in TV, they announced today, Will, that they're putting 33 speed cameras in the city of San Jose, California. So they're coming back.
They're coming back some places. Last I heard, Tucson doesn't have an interest in them.
No.
But here's the thing about speed cameras is, and just, I'm going to call it photo enforcement. Here's what really does work is when you have red light cameras at the right kinds of intersections, busy intersections with, a lot of left turns and relatively high speeds. If you put in a photo red light camera, it has a dramatic impact in reducing serious injury accidents like T-bone, changes, driver behavior at the intersection, and that saves lives and prevents injuries. That's different from photo speed cameras. If you look at the evidence for those, it's much less compelling in terms of saving lives and preventing injuries. And so I always make a distinction in photo enforcement between red light cameras, which are evidence-based, which we know save lives and prevent injuries, especially when they're put in the right intersections, and speed cameras, which have very little evidence that they're effective. And I think what irritates many drivers is that they believe, and perhaps rightfully so, that the speed cameras are really for revenue generation,
right,
rather than saving lives and preventing injuries. Every year down at the legislature, there's a bill that works, that gets proposed, and sometimes it gets a little traction, which would prohibit all photo enforcement of all kinds. And here's my beef is that these jurisdictions, Paradise Valley is one of them, where there's speed cameras every 300 meters, just about. And it's clearly designed for revenue generation.
Yeah,
are overdoing it. And that's going to end up resulting in stopping jurisdictions like the city of Phoenix, which is now going to install some photo red light cameras, from it would stop them from being able to do that. And I just wish these cities that are using photo enforcement speed cameras for revenue generation would just cool it. Because it's going to ruin it for everybody that wants to do the right thing with red light cameras, which do save lives. So I'm glad you asked about this, because there's a big difference between the two in terms of what works.
Yeah, and the city of Tucson, we've had the police chief on numerous times here on the Buckmaster Show, and he's all in on the red light cameras, because the evidence is there, as you have pointed out, that it does prevent or save lives, and we've had some really highly publicized and tragic events here lately in the city of Tucson, where multiple lives were lost from red light runners. It's almost an epidemic here in Tucson, Will.
Oh, I know. And like I said, it's too bad that some of these cities are using the speed cameras, and it undermines public support for things like photo red light cameras, which people get instinctively. I mean, people know, okay, I get that. Like, they understand that red light cameras work, and I think there's broad support for that. But it's these speed cameras that are being used to generate revenue that's going to maybe ruin it for everybody.
You had a three-part series on your blog about mental health. Could you kind of summarize that for our listeners, Will?
Yeah. So, there for people with a serious mental illness, like, say, schizophrenia, schizoaffective disorder, bipolar disorder, something like that, sometimes the person who has that disorder, let's say schizophrenia, they don't believe that there's anything wrong and that they need treatment for their condition. And it's really frustrating for families because they know their son or daughter needs to get that kind of treatment, but they can't get them to do it voluntarily. And so we have a system in Arizona, which is called civil commitment or court ordered treatment. And what it is allows family members or other people to do is to petition a judge and present evidence that the person really needs psychiatric treatment, drug treatment, and other therapies. And then if the judge ends up saying, yes, I see that this person is a danger to themselves or others and they need treatment, they can order the person to get court-ordered treatment, to take their medications and so forth. And most of the time, for many, many people, that actually works, and they get into treatment because the judge ordered them to it. And then, they're in an environment, they are taking their medications, and they begin to get better over time. But there are some people who just really need a more secure environment, especially at the beginning, so that they begin to take their, because a lot of these meds don't work fast. I mean, it might take a month or longer for the drugs to start working, or you might need to try different combinations of drugs. And for a subset of people, they need to be in a more secure environment that they just can't up and leave, because until their medicines start kicking in and they start to see the progress and become less of a risk of stopping to take their medicine. And we've got a real problem in Arizona, in my opinion, and have had for a long time, where we just don't have enough facilities that can accept people who do need that kind of intensive treatment in a more secure setting, again, so that at the beginning they can't just leave and say, I'm going to Circle K and get cigarettes and just never come back or something like that, but a more secure setting. And we've been advocating down at the Capitol for our state Medicaid agency Access and the state legislature to appropriate money so that we can have more secure residential facilities, so that people can have a place to go for this treatment for their psychiatric disorder when they are a flight risk in that initial period of treatment. But we just simply do not have enough places that can provide that kind of treatment. And we've been really shaking the trees and trying to get that going. And we actually did get $35 million in the state 2022 budget. But when Governor Hobbs came in that first year of her governorship, they swept that money. And even though there was a lot of money in the budget that year, and they swept it. And now we still have this deficit of treatment facilities for people. And so that three-part blog post is really trying to educate the public and lawmakers, in addition to in before the legislative session begins, so that they understand why it's so important to build our capacity for this kind of secure treatment.
All right, and folks can follow you on the blog at azpha.org, Arizona Public Health Association. Will, before we let you go, is there some good news about opioid overdose death declining?
Nationally, we see a decline in opioid deaths across the entire country. We're starting from a really high point, so it's not like this thing is over, but at least it's leveled off and going down nationally. But the thing is, it's not uniform across the U.S. And what we see is certain states like Alaska, where things are continuing to get much, much worse. Other states like Nebraska, for example, and North Carolina, where they've had really steep reductions in opioid deaths. So some states are doing better at than others, but overall, we're starting to see finally a decrease. Part of it may be the way these states are using their opioid settlement dollars for things like naloxone, which is the reversal drug for opioid poisonings, better treatment facilities and infrastructure and so forth. In Arizona, we're just about even. We've leveled off. It's not getting worse, but we haven't seen it turn around yet here in Arizona.
All right. Will Humble, the executive director of the Arizona Public Health Association, again, follow him. He's very active with his blogs about public health, and you can see those and read those at azpha.org. Okay, Will, any final public health comments here before the holidays?
Happy Halloween. That's it.
All right. Hey, Will, thanks very much. Talk to you soon. All right. Will Humble, executive director of the Arizona Public Health Association. As I mentioned, there's a very, very happy animal, and I've learned his name. Monica Dangler posted on Facebook a nice picture of her driving Lance, L-A-N-C-E, over here to the Buckmaster Show. He'll be coming in the studio, and I'm sure we're going to have many smiles when I see that animal. Back after this.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The extraordinary beauty and craftsmanship of Mexican artisans is yours at Clay and Cloth in Barrio Viejo, featuring gorgeous clay pottery sourced from southern Mexico, including Oaxaca, Puebla, Merida, and Hidalgo. Also discover amazing textiles you won't find anywhere else in Tucson. Clay and Cloth also has an incredible selection of new Dia de los Muertos merchandise. See the selection on Instagram at Mad Max the Dog Shop and visit Clay and Cloth. Open Tuesday through Saturday from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at 310 South Convent, just south of Cushing.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things Zilkalo Village Studio. They're getting ready for the holidays at Green Things. I checked today to see how many they have grown. When I say they, the poinsettias. 20,000? They've got to have the largest poinsettia growing operation in the United States. I mean, I don't know that for sure, but certainly in Arizona, my goodness, 20,000. So Green Things voted Tucson best garden center, 13 acres of a grower's paradise, family owned and operated since 1970, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. I think one of my poinsettias lasted well into June, so they do a really nice job with the very kind of staple for the holidays, and we'll be talking obviously a lot more about that as we kind of close in now on the final 2 months of the year. Where did this year go? When we do our telephone interviews, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, we have a very, very active dog with us. A loving animal with me in the studio. Come here, Lance. Come here, Lance. Come on. Oh, there you go. Give you a little treat. Monica Dangler joining us. We love to have Monica on the show, and we're going to miss her. She will be leaving as the director of the Pima Animal Care Center probably early December. Hey, Monica, how are you?
Hey, Bill. Great. Thanks for having me today.
So tell our listeners about what's going on in your life.
Yeah. So, Pima Animal Care Center, I've been the director there interim director since 2020, October 2020. So almost exactly 4 years. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited that I'm able to transition on into an animal sheltering consultant role where I'll be able to help shelters that are struggling.
And boy, do they need it nationwide. And we'll talk about that during the interview, but go ahead.
Yeah, they're struggling, and help them implement some of the programs and policies that we have at PAC that really make PAC successful so that they can, euthanize less animals and save more lives. So I'm pretty excited about it. And I know the team at PAC is amazing, and they are just going to keep doing really amazing things.
And Steve Kasachek, former Tucson City Councilman, good friend of mine and the show, has been appointed by Jan Lesher, the county administrator, to kind of act as an interim director between now, when you're getting ready to leave, and then a permanent replacement is brought in.
That's right.
So you're working on the transition here.
Yep, that's right. So we're getting Steve all caught up on all things PAC, so that
and he loves animals.
Yeah. So yeah, he's real great, and he's excited, and the staff is excited. So I think this transition will be nice and successful till we get that permanent person. We've got lots of people throughout the country looking for potential directors for PAC. So I know that PAC will get a really amazing director that has animal welfare experience and loves animals and really has the same priorities as Pima County.
All right. Now let's talk about my priority, and that is getting Lance a forever home. And we've had good success with animals that have been brought to the program. Not overnight success. Sometimes takes a while, but those things happen. But I want to get this animal situated, hopefully, for the holidays. And for folks who are my Facebook friends, and there are a lot of them, you posted a great picture of you and Lance in the car, in the van, on the way over to the show today. Tell our listeners, describe for us this very, very happy dog.
Yeah, he's a really great dog.
Lance, come here.
He hasn't met a stranger. He's sleeping over here, Bill.
Oh, all right. All right.
He has not ever met a stranger. He loves seeing everyone. He loves riding in the car. He's very energetic. He would be a great hiking dog, but at the same time, when you leave him alone, like we just did now, he puts himself to sleep. He lays down in the corner and takes a nap. So he's just a real nice boy. He was the go-to dog for us to take out and meet people. And so I wanted to bring him out here. He's been at the shelter for about 2 months. Mm-hmm. He's had some kennel mates. He hasn't really enjoyed living with another dog in a kennel, which is understandable.
He'd like to fly solo in somebody's home.
But he does go to playgroup, and he loves playgroup. So just in those close quarters, he just wasn't enjoying living with someone. Mm-hmm. But we do playgroups daily. He loves going to playgroup. He loves people and has a great time. And if you're looking for a fun dog, whether it's energetic or not, or a low-energy dog, I think he fits the bill either way.
Yeah, and his appearance on the show was signaled when I heard a knocking on the studio door, and it was actually Lance's tail just going crazy as he was greeted by our friends here at Bustos Media. Everybody loves Lance, and again, if folks want to take a picture or see him, go to Bill Buckmaster, my Facebook friends. We've got a picture of his big smiling face there on my Facebook page. So dogs like Lance, loving animals, are not welcome, though, in some places that renters struggle to want to bring a pet, but they can't, right?
Yeah, it's really right. It's really hard for renters. Both, big dogs. We all always think of big dogs, especially like pit bulls or German shepherds or Rottweilers, having trouble. But large breed dogs have a problem finding places to live if you rent. But even cats, if you have more than two dogs, it's typically, or more than two pets, it's typically tricky to find somewhere to rent. So it's tricky, and we're trying to encourage more and more landlords and apartment complexes and places like that to be pet inclusive, not pet friendly, but to include all animals, because we know that having a pet is so important to people, to keep them healthy. And that human animal bond is so important. And when people have pets, they're usually better tenants. They're more likely to pay on time and to stay at that place longer and to be great tenants. So we're always encouraging landlords and, like I said, complexes and places like that to be pet inclusive, so people can easily find places to live with their pets.
And speaking of residents, we talked about Lance being at Pima Animal Care for a couple of months. Your longest term resident, and it was over a year, it just warmed my heart, made my day to see the Facebook post. And you and the team, they do a great job on social media, putting up an animal dog that is going to a forever home after being there for 1 year. I mean, that's a long time and tremendous stress to be at the center that long, Monica.
Absolutely. Yeah. Our public information officer, Kaylee, she does a really great job at trying to share those really fun stories, along with the events and what's going on at Pima Animal Care Center to really, make the community feel that they're part of Pima Animal Care Center. Because that's our goal, right? Is to be a community animal center for everybody to be involved in. So I always enjoy seeing those stories of those long stay dogs, or those dogs that have just been with us for a while or have different challenges when they find that perfect person to go home with, right? Not every family's perfect for every dog, but there is a family that's perfect for a dog.
Shelters are just struggling all over the country, and we'll talk more about that after the break. But quickly, the Pima, there's Lance back with me. Here's a goodie. Lance, come here. Here's one of your goodies. There you go. He took a little nap, but he's up and about. And one of the challenges the animals have to double up, right? And mm-hmm. sometimes triple up. And I'm wondering, when the design of the shelter, was that in mind, or has this struggle across the country with so many animals, is that something that everybody's dealing with?
Yeah, everybody.
Pretty much everybody across the country.
Yeah, everybody's dealing with it. And, you know, there's multiple things, right? It's not any one thing. You know, the pandemic added to it because so many of the veterinary offices and spay neuter places closed for a significant amount of time. I mean, even PAC didn't spay and neuter for about a month. We didn't do any spay neuter, so then we had to catch up on it. So when veterinary offices are closed or those basic services aren't offered for even a month, that really starts, you know, getting us behind the eight ball on things. So there was those things, and we saw right after the pandemic, you know, more pets coming in with parvo or distemper, right? Because they weren't getting their basic vaccines. So we're not really at that place anymore. While we're always behind the eight ball on spay neuter, you know, we've caught up on the vaccination piece of it. But then there's the piece of the pet inclusive housing. Everybody's seen their housing costs rise, whether you're a renter or you're purchasing a home. We see home purchases increasing. So those expenses are going up, right? You see the care for animals, dog food and pet food and cat food and litter are all about 30% higher than pre-pandemic.
Prices are that? Oh, man.
Yep. So prices are going higher. And then, right, veterinary care. We're seeing, you know, during the pandemic, at least in Tucson, we saw a lot of established veterinarians in Tucson who were like, I think this is time to retire, which, good for them. I mean, I don't want to take anything away from them retiring, but we haven't seen the new practices taking over. And we've seen a lot of private equity coming in, taking over some of these practices, which, you know, tends to drive up the prices. So getting into a veterinary office and getting an appointment is challenging, even if you have an established vet, because there's just not enough vets for the people who are going there. And then, you know, the costs are increasing, both because there's less vets around and supply and demand, but also because their costs are increasing, just like the pet food and all of that. So it's just kind of the perfect storm for people and pets that's, you know, impacting, unfortunately, shelters.
All right. We'll talk more with Monica Dangler, who is going on to be a consultant talking and trying to help other animal welfare groups and shelters around the country. That will be her new job, but she is still the director until early December. We'll talk more with Monica. It's the Buckmaster Show on a Thursday. Coming up tomorrow, Monica was talking about the high cost of housing. That will be our topic when David Godleski from the Southern Arizona Home Builders Association talks with Tim Steller and myself about what's going on with housing. That's tomorrow on our Friday Focus interview. But right now, let's take a break, back with Monica, Rita, and Lance, who's taking another little nap with me in studio right after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. In 2006, Pima County voters approved the Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year Regional Transportation Plan and half-cent sales tax. They are both effective through June 30th, 2026. For the region to receive continued funding for another 20 years, the RTA is developing a new plan and tax extension for voter consideration. Public input will be key. To receive updates on a new 20-year plan in development, visit rtanext.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, Fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. What a beautiful day over in Silver City. It's a perfect time of year to take that trip to Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. New Mexico is especially enchanting in the autumn, and it's not a bad drive at all. It's about 3 hours, and you will find a different environment over there, and an environment that I think you'll be very much at home with, if you like the outdoors and hiking. And the Gila Cliff Dwellings National Monument is there, and the Gila National Wilderness. Start your planning by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. And I hope folks are planning to come to the Pima Animal Care Center to adopt one of my guests today. Lance, come here, Lance. What are you looking out at outside the studio at some of the Bustos Media people who just have fallen in love with this dog? Monica Dangler is here. Monica is going to be the outgoing and is the outgoing director. I mean, she's outgoing. Her personality is outgoing, but now she's outgoing to have another position in the animal welfare field, and she'll be consulting with shelters around the country about how to improve their operation and hopefully get more animals forever homes. Let's talk about one of the things you're very proud of, the foster care program.
Yeah, our foster program is one of the most robust foster programs in the country, mm-hmm. compared to both government-funded shelters and nonprofit shelters. There's a few that have larger programs than us in the nonprofit sector, but for a government-funded shelter, we've got the most robust program, which is amazing. And that's all because of our community and because of our government leadership. We don't see large foster programs in government-funded shelters as often because sometimes there's fears of liability and things like that. So the support that Pima County gives PAC is amazing. And then the support from our community to welcome these pets into their homes and take care of them, whether they're little teeny couple-week-old kittens that they have to wake up every 2 hours and feed, or they're big dogs like Lance, mm-hmm. right, that just need a break out of the shelter. Mm-hmm. We have anywhere from 1,100 to 1,500 pets out and fostered at any given time, and that's no small feat. So I appreciate and want to thank the community of Pima County for helping us do that, which ultimately creates a life-saving shelter.
There was a question about someone wanted to foster. I think I saw that on Facebook, that there are some, are there financial benefits to the foster, or some things covered for the foster family?
So right now there's a couple things. Right, okay. Now we're doing a promotion, and it all goes right through the end of the weekend. Okay. Anybody who takes a dog 40 pounds or bigger, so Lance would work, yep. take him home to foster for 2 weeks, you get paid $5 a day, so $70.
Oh, okay.
So just to help pay for food or whatever. I would give you some fun money. So we're doing that right now just to kind of help move the animals out of the shelter because we've got a large number of dogs in the shelter. But then normally, if you foster just any time, you know, we try to provide you as much support as we can. We typically can give food to you to help feed. You do have to come, you know, fairly often to come over and get it. If you need a crate, we typically have those. If you're fostering kitty cats, we usually have litter boxes or hidey holes and things like that. So we're always trying to give as much to the fosters as possible because we know fostering takes not only their time and energy, but sometimes it takes a little bit of money, too, to take care of those pets in their homes.
Why are shelters not doing it as much? Because some of the red tape and stuff like that?
Yeah, for, you know, nonprofits do it a lot.
Yeah.
For government shelters, yeah, the red tape, and there's a lot of, you know, liability fears of sending pets out into homes, which, you know, our government is very supportive of that, and it's really no different than
sending them out.
And it really starts
at the top. Jan Lesher loves animals, the county administrator, and she is so supportive of you guys.
Absolutely. It definitely starts from the top. And but yeah, it's no different than sending them home to an adoptive home. So, and they recognize that, and you know, all the teams that we work with in Pima County are just so helpful and supportive of PAC, and I think that's why we're able to have such a robust program.
So you love that. That's one of the high points of your career here at PAC. Anything else you want to mention?
Absolutely. I mean, I think just in general, the high points, right, is we made it through COVID, right? Which, yay. But then we continue to grow and improve our processes, right? We started the first safety net foster program, which provides short-term foster care to pets of people in temporary crisis. We were able, because we were the first government-funded shelter to do that, provide a toolkit to other shelters to do that. We've been able to mentor shelters on how their admissions processes look to make it more smooth and to best serve the community, right? We implemented Petco Love Lost to help pets get back home and reunited without coming to the shelter. So there's just so many things we've done, and all of those things have involved the community support. So I think that's what I'm most proud of, is we've been transparent, have been involving the community just to continue to build and make the shelter better and better.
And there have been challenges, certainly, with your capacity there.
Absolutely. You know, I definitely won't say it's been all roses,
no,
right?
No.
But like you said, nationally, everybody struggled with capacity. What we have been lucky to do is we haven't had to start reverting back to the old days where we're euthanizing 10, 15, 25 animals at a time. Instead, because of the processes we have in place, those animals that are at risk, we're able to put out to the community, let them know about it, and our community supports us, whether they're coming directly to PAC to get them or going to one of our rescue partners, and our rescue partners are being able to support us and take those pets.
And your save rate?
We are still at 90%. So
good.
We're still at that life-saving
good
rate.
All right, Monica, always a pleasure. And I want to wish you the very best in the next step in your wonderful career in animal welfare work. Thank you, Monica.
Absolutely.
All right, that's going to do it. And by the way, Lance is available for adoption right now. This is a wonderful animal. What a friendly, friendly animal. Taking a little nap right now, but he's been a good buddy to me here in the studio. All right. On behalf of Monica Dangler and Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the show, Bill Buckmaster wishing everybody well.